Good morning, everyone. Are we ready to start? Okay. Again, if you can't hear me, hand flailing. Start a new topic today, Brother John James Andrew, and I've entitled this Offender or Defender. J.J. Andrew, the very name elicits emotion and controversy. Brother Andrew, along with Brother Thomas Williams, was a principal defender of unamended doctrine in the early years surrounding the amendment to the Statement of Faith. His efforts and work are at the same time a source of pride and embarrassment for different members within our fragile community. Branded as the father of the unamended community by the amended, and a brother of extremes by members of both fellowships, association with his name and writings is avoided and discouraged in some unamended circles, while it's championed in others. I think the sign on the lunch counter last night tells you where Arkansas stands. My purpose in this review will be to examine this controversy and this contradiction. What factors account for these divergent opinions? And is the controversy regarding Brother Andrew legitimate? Most important, what impact has this divided opinion had upon our fellowship? So I want to start with Brother Andrew's reputation, but first we need to kind of review some facts. Brother Andrew worked alongside Brother Robert Roberts in the publication of the Christadelphian magazine for years until 1894, when he and Robert Roberts went their separate ways. Brother Andrew had been a major contributor to the Christadelphian magazine. He was well known and respected within the Christadelphian community. Henry Selle, in the preface to his second edition of the Temple of Ezekiel's Prophecy, published in 1892, makes note of the assistance of both Brother Andrew and Brother Roberts in proofreading and revising. Brother Andrew started publishing The Sanctuary Keeper in 1894 and continued it through 1902. And in that publication, he took issue with Robert Roberts and what the Christadelphian magazine was teaching. Now, considering the amendment and the scorn that the amended followers have for Brother Andrew, it's no surprise that his reputation among that group is negative. And there's examples. In a letter from Alfred Nichols and Harry Tennant to the secretary of the amended Continental Reunion Committee back in 1981, they make this comment. We indicated our agreement to the proposals made at the March conference because we understood at that time that all the problems arising out of the J.J. Andrew errors had been examined, and as a consequence, agreement had been expressed on the nature of man, the nature of Christ, and the atonement. The principal cause of the difficulty lies in the strong inferences which our unamended brethren seem to expect us to draw, whereby resurrectional responsibility is directly related to covenant-making. We do not and cannot accept this concept, because it appears to us to be the doctrine of J.J. Andrew in another guise. So they differ with us widely on this, and they label it as a J.J. Andrew error. Under the category of J.J. Andrew errors includes the nature of man, the nature of Christ, the atonement, and here specifically addressing the accusation that the unamended brethren follow J.J. Andrew doctrine in their belief regarding resurrectional responsibility, because we believe it is directly related to covenant making. Also, in the Logos, March 1995, Brother Ferrer criticizes the phrase used by the authors that Brother Andrew is the father of the unamended community. Whilst it is true historically that Brother Williams, as editor of the Advocate magazine, predates the division caused by the teaching of Brother Andrew, the statement was considered representatively as indicating that the advocate brethren follow the teachings represented by Brother Andrew in the areas of resurrection responsibility and hereditary alienation. The advocate community adheres to the teachings which are clearly aligned to those of J.J. Andrew. For example, a person must be baptized for the remission of sins, Adamic and individual. The advocate community continues to teach that we are alienated from God by birth in addition to personal transgressions. And they've got that right. Reporting that Brother Andrew is the father of the unamended community, that the advocate brethren follow Brother Andrew's teachings, and the implication, the allegation here is that these were somehow new teachings introduced by J.J. Andrew, which is ridiculous. Even within the unamended community, we find Brother Andrew's reputation and association with the amendment commented upon. In Doctrinal Consequences of Clause 24, the way it's written, it almost seems to attribute the division and the amendment to what Brother Andrew had written in the Blood of the Covenant. We have cited only a few samples of amended literature and tapes that omit any reference to the fact that the baptized believer becomes a party to the Abrahamic covenant and consequently an heir to the things covenanted therein. Many more samples could be submitted and are on file in this writer's library. How did this erosion of doctrine take place, talking about the erosion of doctrine within the amended community? The answer lies in the title of a booklet which was published in 1894 in Britain, titled The Blood of the Covenant by Brother J.J. Andrew. The amendment to the Statement of Faith was introduced in 1898 to counteract the Andrew view. Amended writers and teachers since that time, in their zeal to denigrate the Andrew view, have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. The bathwater is the extreme position taken by Brother Andrew. And we'll get more into that later. But here again we have the notation of Brother Andrew's extreme view and the amended community's overreaction and error in attempting to counter that view. But also there has been a very clear recognition and support expressed on behalf of Brother Andrew. Brother Ken McPhee addresses this issue and the motivation of Brother Andrew. In his Christadelphian History, he says, in the 1890s, a very vigorous controversy arose. The controversy was principally between Robert Roberts and J.J. Andrew, who had discerned a drift in Robert Roberts' writings in the Christadelphian magazine in 1893. The drift was away from the firmly declared teachings in the writings of Robert Roberts from 1870 to 1883, and J.J. Andrew published excerpts to demonstrate this drift. He began to publish his own magazine, The Sanctuary Keeper, and in the first issue, July 1894, he published an indictment against the teaching of the Christadelphian. This was pretty strong stuff and caused a great resentment against J.J. Andrew among the friends and supporters of Robert Roberts. Again, personal relationships, politics, enters into the situation. They always have. They are today. But Brother McPhee here addresses the issue and the motivation of J.J. Andrew. And he seems to hit upon the circumstances leading up to the resentment which resulted, that it was considered an affront to Robert Roberts. Also in the Logos, in a letter to the editor in 1995, and this letter was written by James Stanton, he says, I've never heard the expression that J.J. Andrew is the father of the unamended community, but I do know that his views have been for years and currently are shared by many in the unamended. The amended have a right to call J.J. Andrew extreme because his views do not agree with theirs, but the unamended hold his views by and large on the purpose of baptism, inherited alienation, including that of Jesus, and the grave releasing efficacy of the blood of the covenant. And lastly, in the Advocate, March of 97, Reflections on a Pioneer, I believe written by Brother Edward Fair. He says, among the prominent names of the pioneers of our faith is one that stands out as a principal defender and activist. This man is more often associated with the controversy surrounding a few of his teachings than he is with the many other contributions that he made. We are speaking to Brother J.J. Andrew. The position of this magazine has always been that the general understanding of Brother Andrew in these areas is consistent with the teachings of Brother John Thomas and the teachings contained in Brother Robert's final work, The Law of Moses. Recognizing the controversy of Brother Andrew's teachings on resurrection and responsibility, but significantly embracing and supporting his teachings on these so-called errors. Now, the challenge in a review of Brother Andrew's impact and contribution to the truth is really sorting out fact from fiction, reputation from reality. I don't know that I, in this presentation, can do that, but perhaps we can fill in some of the pieces. Brother Andrew is perhaps best known for his booklet, The Blood of the Covenant, which was released in 1894. It was a booklet which the author himself said was written to address the subject of atonement. And in the preface of that book, here's what he says. 20 years ago, the one body passed through a controversial conflict concerning the nature of Jesus Christ at his first appearing. It was then clearly demonstrated that Christ was, by birth, related to condemnation in Adam to the same extent as the rest of the race, and that he was made of the same fallen or sinful nature. It fell to my lot to take a prominent part in the aforesaid conflict, and as a result of it, I wrote the pamphlet entitled The Doctrine of the Atonement. The scriptural principles embodied therein constitute the basis of what I have here written, and they are consistently applied to the several steps by which men may pass from condemnation in Adam to immortalization in Christ. Both Brother Andrew and Brother Roberts had worked together some 20 years earlier to oppose the renunciationist controversy. And the renunciationist controversy was basically the introduction of clean flesh, or as they referred to it back in those days, as free life teachings. Brother Andrew, as he explains in his preface, was here expounding upon the atonement process and the efficacy of Christ's shed blood, the same thing that he had written before and that Brother Roberts had praised. So he's saying, there's nothing new here. This is what we fought for 20 years ago. However, the blood of the covenant received a hostile reception by many in England, and immediately it became a source of contention. Immediately, Brother Andrew and Brother Roberts were pitted against each other's positions. Lines were drawn. Sides were taken. And the topic of resurrection responsibility went from an unimportant one, not unimportant, but not one with a lot of attention, and became the focus of attention and controversy. And immediately, allegations of extremes were made against Brother Andrew. Now let's consider that. Let's consider his extremes. When one reads the Blood of the Covenant, there are some controversial things in the Blood of the Covenant. And I doubt that any of them were or are new to the Christadelphian community. So among things you'll find in the Blood of the Covenant is he talks about violent death that has offended people. Now, what is a violent death? It means Christ had to die a violent death. He had to be sacrificed. It would not be a natural death. Somebody was not going to grow old and die in their sleep. Their life would be taken, and that's what they refer to as a violent death. Others said Christ didn't have to do that. He talks about eighth-day sin, speculating that Adam and Eve sinned on the eighth day. He talked about Enoch's translation, asserting that maybe Enoch actually wasn't dead, but was preserved somewhere. And you hear those same controversies today. And then, of course, he talked about resurrection or responsibility, which he said is only for the servants of the Lord, only those in covenant relationship. Now, these so-called controversial interpretations were within the Christadelphian community in Brother Andrew's day, and they're with us today. And I would dare say that most of us here really don't get upset if others in our community believe that maybe Enoch is preserved somewhere awaiting Christ's return, or if God intended the death sentence upon Adam to be immediate or a dying state. I'm sure we have opinions, but we don't separate over these kind of things. Generally, they are seen as interpretations of less consequence than the fundamental principles of the faith. And even regarding resurrection or responsibility, even though we as a community do not believe that God will raise those outside of covenant relationship for the purpose of punishment, our community particularly then traditionally determined not to make the subject a matter of fellowship. And it was not made a matter of fellowship up until the amendment. Those that remain unamended, always had the attitude that if you believe God may, that he might do something like that, fine, don't teach it, don't preach it as doctrine, don't push it, because we all do not believe that. So we recognize, okay, there is controversy in the booklet, The Blood of the Covenant. However, controversy in pioneer writings does not begin and end with Brother Andrew. Have we not been equally consumed by topics of controversy from so-called respected pioneer writers on such topics as the identification of the sheep and the goats, the post-millennial rebellion, the second resurrection? How have we reacted to Dr. Thomas's interpretation of the angels that sinned in Elpis, Israel, or his third-class resurrection in Anastasis? And is our community avoiding Robert Roberts because of his stand and statements regarding resurrection of responsibility in Christian Demonstre? He said, when called from darkness to light by the preaching of the gospel, whether they submit to that gospel or refuse submission, they are not their own. They neither live nor die to themselves as formerly. They have passed into a special relationship to deity in which their lives, good or evil, come under divine supervision and form the basis of a future accountability unknown in their state of darkness at which God winked. Despite these controversies, we in the unamended community have not discouraged the readings of these works, nor have we distanced ourselves from these authors. You recognize error, and you treat it as such. Back to Brother Andrew's extremes. I'm not aware that the unamended used the term error in relation to Brother Andrew, although some who call themselves unamended have. Those familiar with the Blood of the Covenant recognize the controversy in the violent death, the eighth day, Enoch being translated, yes. And some use the word extreme in regard to Brother Andrew's latter stand when he finally said, and this is 10 years after he wrote the Blood of the Covenant and 6 years after the amendment, and he had a stroke, and he said, God cannot raise. However, the amended consciously use the word error and not only apply it to resurrection or responsibility, but also to our foundation beliefs on hereditary alienation, baptism for remission of Adamic sin, the nature of man, the nature of Christ, and the atonement. The amended have purposely associated the name of Brother Andrew with what they call unamended error, and some obviously refer to Brother Andrew as the father of the unamended community, as though we adopted and came across those beliefs at the point that Brother Andrew wrote about them, as though those were new beliefs introduced by him, again, ridiculous and easy to disprove. One of the problems which contributes to the confusion is a lack of familiarity with the actual writings of Brother Andrew. And I might suggest that many unamended likewise are unfamiliar with the Blood of the Covenant and other works by Brother Andrew. If all one knows about the man is that he is considered controversial and extreme, that he is accused of limiting the power of God, well, of course, we're bound to be cautious. but the reputation exceeds the tone of the author. So I want to take just a few minutes and look at the blood of the covenant, specifically at the part where he addresses resurrection responsibility. This is what upset everybody in England. The dead in Adam have not been brought under the law of the Spirit of life, and therefore they are not amenable to its retribution. They have never been freed from the law of sin and death, and therefore the death on which they have entered is endless. To bring them out of the grave for further punishment would be to terminate one endless death for the purpose of inflicting upon them another. Cannot God raise anyone and for any purpose? No, because to do so would stultify his own word. God has chosen to regulate his actions in regard to death and resurrection by law. He has decreed that death must follow sin, and that such death can only be terminated or averted by justification from the sin which caused it. The endless subjection to death of unjustified sinners is essential to the fulfillment of the law of sin and death. And on the other hand, the deliverance from the grave of those who have died after being justified, whether faithful or unfaithful, is equally necessary to the fulfillment of the law of the Spirit of life. To stop the operation of the law of sin and death without justification from sin for the purpose of applying a feature confined to the law of the Spirit of life would introduce confusion and be a violation of justice. It would also destroy the distinction between the two laws of an antagonistic character. God has shown both by word and deed that strict adherence to his own laws is a supreme feature of his character. People went crazy. The question which each of you need to ask yourselves, is Brother Andrew's position here offensive? Is he limiting the power of God, or is he recognizing God's laws and character? Does his belief, in fact, have anything to do with those in covenant relationship, those who most certainly will appear before the judgment seat of Christ? And does it matter to you that God may, by his independent power outside of the laws given us, decide to do something else? In addition, the central, the amended, felt that this warranted amending the statement of faith and excluding from fellowship all who would not confess that resurrection responsibility was related to light and not to covenant making. But again, traditionally the unamended had been content to consider this at the most an open question, but now the matter is so convoluted with changed positions on the part of the amended to support resurrection responsibility of the enlightened rejecter that we really can't say that anymore. Nevertheless, there seems to be a prevailing belief that Brother Andrew, and specifically the blood of the covenant, somehow caused the division. It was obviously a catalyst. It set in motion, it brought to the forefront controversy between brethren already holding divergent views. Brother Andrew was not content to let this wide divergence of belief lie. And his forceful contention that God would not raise any outside of covenant relationship was a challenge to those who believed otherwise. Note, in the Blood of the Covenant, the Blood of the Covenant was published in February 1894. Robert Roberts responded that same year with a pamphlet called Resurrection to Condemnation, and notice what he says. He says, it is with no pleasure that I write an answer to the pamphlet that has just been published by Brother J.J. Andrew of London, entitled Blood of the Covenant. The personal respect which I hold him, the number of good things that the pamphlet contains, and the advantage given to the enemies of the truth by conflict among its friends, and the discouragement and distress that must necessarily be caused by many who are waiting for Christ by the flood of mystifying technicalities let loose upon them from quarters where edification ought to be looked for. So Brother Roberts, talking about the Blood of the Covenant, he says two things. He says it contains good things and also mystifying technicalities. Thomas Williams also notes the reaction, and he enters the debate. So in The Advocate in June, again, 1894, this is what he says. He says, what is the matter with you over there? Who is this man that you are venting your cruelty on? Is all this fuss because he does not believe in the resurrection of some out of Christ? No, that cannot be. For some in nearly every ecclesia have not believed that ever since the revival of the truth in this 19th century, and no such fuss as this has been raised. No, it is not because he did not believe in the resurrection of some out of Christ, but it is because he made that belief offensive by continually forcing it upon the attention of the ecclesia and has set out a pamphlet giving vent to his belief. Well, since the difference between him and yourselves was not considered an essential one, it would have been wiser on his part not to make it offensive. Sorry, that's where that is. So, whereas Robert Roberts referred to it as mystifying technicalities, Thomas Williams says, well, it's an unessential belief made offensive, but certainly nothing new. Notice, the blood of the covenant forcefully presented Brother Andrew's view, but at this point, the major players are labeling his presentation strictly as a technicality and an unessential belief. But the controversy continued and it grew, and positions hardened and positions changed. The amendment to the Statement of Faith was introduced in 1898, 4 years later, and the Christadelphian body was divided. Now, in response to Brother Andrew making his belief offensive, the Central not only made their belief offensive, but they elevated it to a matter of fellowship and split the community. Now, you know there's more to it than Brother Andrew's booklet that would result in such a terrible outcome. And we note that Brother Andrew maintains a prominent role in the following years, but as we examine his part, what you need to consider individually is, he an offender or a defender or both? So I want to focus on this question. Is Brother Andrew to be considered an offender or a defender? In truth, it's really an assessment of conscience to be made by each of us individually, and will probably be shaped by where we stand on his beliefs. So to help us assess this complicated man, I want to look at three areas. Number one, Brother Andrew's change in view and his public challenge to Robert Roberts. Number two, Brother Andrew's relationship with Thomas Williams. And number three, his last years, a time that I have labeled fighting with his own. So number one, Brother Andrew's change in view and his challenge to Robert Roberts. This is an important topic, not only in understanding the development and maturing of Brother Andrew's understanding on resurrection responsibility, but maybe in understanding the extent of the negative reaction in England against him. Brother Andrew was one of them. He was a respected contributor to the Christadelphian magazine. He was a respected assistant to Robert Roberts in his duties as editor. He was author of what we know today as the real Christ, Jesus Christ and Him Crucified, which is still used by the amended community. And for him to forcefully present a viewpoint on a controversial topic was unpopular in that the then recent trend orchestrated by Robert Roberts was going the opposite direction of where J.J. Andrew was. So for him to challenge Robert Roberts and point out that he had drifted from an earlier correct position to an erroneous position was just perhaps more than Robert Roberts' supporters could bear, particularly when Brother Andrew had earlier been on record and in seeming agreement with Robert Roberts' current stand. Now, that's the interesting part. Now, we note the Real Christ was published in 1870. It was 24 years earlier. And in that book, Brother Andrew here discusses resurrectional responsibility, and he offers the traditional understanding as it had been traditionally laid out by Dr. Thomas. He says, "All will not be under the title of all will not be resurrected. All men, however, will not then be raised from the dead, for where no law is, there is no transgression. And as many as have sinned without law shall also perish without law. Daniel is therefore quite in harmony with the other prophets when he predicts that only some or many of them that sleep shall awake. The many will comprise all those who, by a knowledge of God's revealed truth, have been brought into a state of responsibility from the time of Abel to the second appearing of Jesus Christ. Again, the standard line introduced by Dr. Thomas is uttered 24 years earlier. Robert Roberts takes note of this, what he calls this change in attitude, and early in the debate between the two, held in April 1894, which is only 2 months after Blood of the Covenant was published, he throws that up. He says, "We have in past times dwelt together in unity as regards the particular issue raised tonight, and if there is any change at rest, you know where, with Brother Andrew, who thinks he has discovered some new things he used to think were true, are not true. He was not always of this mind. His change of mind might not have necessitated the present meeting, but he has taken steps which involve an attempt to coerce us into the reception of his views." Brother Andrew responds, "Reference has been made to my change of attitude. Yes, a change from a position I never deemed strong to one I do deem strong." So here we have one of their own in a position of service and respect, calling them on their emphasis and in turn being reminded that he once stood there too. And even though Brother Andrew described his original statement as never deemed strong, it was known. And it was again thrown up to him in 1905 by Thomas Williams. Well, not thrown up, but he was again reminded of it by Thomas Williams. By 1905, Brother Andrew had, as a result of years of conflict, debate, and illness, hardened his position to declare that God could not raise anyone to life, not in covenant relationship. First of all, in the Blood of the Covenant, he said, no, he won't do it. Now he got to the point where he said he could not. Following the example, actually, he was following the example of the central brethren. He was going to cut some people off. And he made this issue a basis of fellowship. And at this point, he refused to fellowship Thomas Williams and submitted for publication in The Advocate his reason for declining to meet. And Brother Williams published Brother Andrew's statement, inserting answers after significant points or accusations. So in an exchange of views in the July 1905 Advocate, first, we have the statement of Brother J.J. Andrew. He says, "Evidence has been advanced in proof that there is no resurrection outside the Abrahamic covenant. When in London, you partially recognize this truth, but you also taught that God may or will raise some Gentiles for punishment or for testimony." Brother Williams responds, "If you mean by this truth that the resurrection, which is a subject matter of the gospel, is through Jesus only, and that only those in covenant relation are the subject thereof, I not only recognized this when in London, but long before you did, and when you were opposed to it." So he's going back to the 24 years earlier. "Indeed, I recognized it at my immersion, and as I told Brother Roberts, learned it through reading 12 lectures. Now, what does that tell you about Brother Roberts going back and forth? "When I first heard that you were discussing the question in London, I concluded from my knowledge of your position previously that you were contending for your old position still, and was under this impression. And it was under this impression I commenced reading the Blood of the Covenant, by which, to my surprise, I learned of your change." So we've got to admit, J.J. Andrew once believed one thing and he changed. Robert Roberts once believed one thing, and he changed. He says, when Thomas Williams says, "I learned it through reading 12 lectures from Robert Roberts." And again, that was the position opposite to what Brother Roberts was taking at that time. And it just points out the very open nature and the mixed and the contradictory understanding of this issue within the brotherhood in that era. So what did cause Brother Andrew to go from a general acceptance of knowledge bringing responsibility to, number one, limiting appearance at the judgment seat of Christ to the covenanted only, and then, later, limiting resurrection to the covenanted only. Brother Andrew's position is perhaps best summarized by an explanation he offers in the March 1895 Sanctuary Keeper. He says, "It was this and similar unsound arguments which satisfied me that the belief in resurrection out of Christ was untenable. First, it was said that any Adam could be raised through the blood of Christ, and then it was contended that even Christ was not raised through his own blood. When such contradictory and unscriptural reasoning is required to bolster up any tenet, it is obviously based on an unsound foundation. It was to me quite a revelation to find that a fundamental truth concerning Christ's death and resurrection could be so perverted by those professing his name, and perceiving the danger involved, duty compelled me to oppose it and to use every opportunity for setting forth the teaching of the Scriptures." And brethren, the Unadmitted Head community has continued that same thought and that same fight to this day. So in reviewing his early standing, his advocacy for his new understanding, was he an offender or a defender? I want to next look at brother relationships, relationship with Brother Thomas Williams, because there's a lot of confusion on that. And we won't get through this today. But Brother Andrews and Brother Williams are both recognized as primary defenders of unamended beliefs. And yet we often hear that Brother Williams did not approve of Brother Andrews, and that Brother Williams labeled him as extreme. And that's something that we need to understand. Because sometimes there's this ominous tone associated with it, implying disapproval by Brother Williams of Brother Andrew and disapproval of the blood of the covenant, which was not the case. What we actually see in a review is initial acceptance and support for Brother Andrew. Over the period 1894 to 1905, there is a change in position, but the change is on Brother Andrew's part. It was Brother Andrew who refuses to fellowship Brother Williams, and it is at this point that Brother Williams speaks of Brother Andrew's extreme claim and fellowship attitude. Let's go back to early 1894, when the Blood of the Covenant was published. We've already reviewed Robert Roberts' comment, held Brother Andrew in personal respect. The pamphlet contained good things, except for the mystifying technicalities. Brother Williams, we've already discovered, was in agreement with Brother Andrew on the relationship between resurrectional responsibility and covenant relationship. He said, "Brother Andrew, I believed this before you did." Brother Williams came out in support of Brother Andrew and sharply criticized his English brethren for their cruel treatment. In the June 1894 Advocate, under the title of "What's the Matter with You Over There?" We've seen a part of it. We recognize what Brother Williams' true position was. "What is the matter with you over there? Wait a little bit, brother. Give that man you have at your feet, whom you are kicking, bruising, and stabbing, a chance to breathe. What is the matter with you over there? Who is this man that you are venting your cruelty on? The J.J. Andrew, who has been a faithful and able and loving brother lo these many years? Now let me beg of you to consider if all these false and ridiculous charges have not increased one wrong into a legion. For here you come running and rushing and stumbling over each other to charge this brother with limiting the power of the Holy One of Israel, with denying the supremacy of God, with sitting in judgment and assuming God's prerogative, with insulting God, etc. Is it that one limits the power of God of Israel, of the God of Israel, because he thinks God's own arrangements according to his revealed plan is so and so? Are we at baptism delivered from anything we receive from Adam? Your answers show that the complaint of the circular was not without foundation, for you ridicule the very thought of Adam's sin being imputed to us. In this excited assault upon Brother Andrew, you have been cutting and slashing till your own positions you occupied when in a normal state have been abandoned and the most reckless statements made. I received his book, read it carefully, agreed with many things it contained, differed from many other things. One thing, however, impressed me, and that was that a becoming spirit, which all his writings show to be characteristic of the man, pervades the book throughout. As it is, your duty is to recall the false things you have imputed to him and escape the dangerous result of bearing false witness against your neighbor. We can't read that and conclude anything other than, at this point, Brother Williams was an ardent supporter of Brother Andrew. I don't think we have time to go on, and I know some of you may not be here tomorrow. If you're interested in this subject, this presentation and all of the overheads are in a booklet in the bookstore, titled the same, J.J. Andrew, Offender or Defender. Thank you.